Good day, this is Craig, and today is Tuesday, February 5th, 2019, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News. And we're going to start with the commercial news on the front page. We have a story entitled City Receives Grant for Ellsworth Park Improvements by Jennifer Bailey. Danville, Disc Golf, a new field for football, and soccer and other improvements will be coming to Ellsworth Park. City officials were notified the city has received $373,900 Open Space Lands Acquisition and Development Grant from the Illinois Department of Natural Resources for the improvements. The city's project, redevelopment of the historic Ellsworth Park, was one of 89 local outdoor recreation projects chosen by the IDNR to receive funding assistance. I'm so proud of Danville Superintendent of Parks and Public Property, Steve Lane, and everyone on our team who helped make this happen. It will be a tremendous boon to Ellsworth Park and the entire city, said Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. in a press release. Last month, Lane made a presentation in Springfield for the grant funding. Aldermen authorized city officials to apply for the funding last fall. The city could apply for up to $400,000, with a 50% city match required. Lane, at that time, said the city would use in-kind services and staff and labor hours for the match. The disc golf course would be new for this area. It involves frisbees thrown at targets. That would be stretched out through a large section of the park. They are very affordable, and it's all work that we can do in-house, Lane said in September. We think that would draw some people in from other communities to come to Danville to play that course and hopefully spend some money here, he added. Lane said any floodwaters wouldn't harm the disc golf equipment either. City officials looked at which park could best use some improvements and be awarded the competitive grant. After careful consideration, we felt Ellsworth Park would be the best candidate to receive funding. It has the greatest potential, Lane said. Additional improvements planned is a new Americans with Disability Act compliant restroom and concessions building. The two restroom buildings at Ellsworth Park have been underwater many times, up to the light fixtures, with them being in the floodplain, Lane says. He said the buildings are in pretty poor condition and are not ADA compliant. A new restroom building is planned on land on a slope out of the floodplain. Other planned improvements are a relocated basketball court, playground on higher ground, and new picnic shelter closer to the playground. Lane also added about the field for football and soccer, "We do have a youth football program that uses Ellsworth Park." He said Ellsworth Park hasn't received any significant improvements in more than 20 years. Lane said there has not been state funding for OSLAD grants over the past few years. Now, $29 million in dedicated funds were available. The improvements also can tie into the Kickapoo Rail Trail project, city officials noted. In past years, the Vermilion County Conservation District received a $400,000 OSLAD grant for the Environmental Education and Interpretive Center at Kennecuck County Park. The city in 2008 also received $373,500 in grant funding to renovate and add new facilities to Carver Park. And continuing on with the commercial news, next story is entitled Digital Sign Before Zoning Commission. This is by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. The Danville Area Planning and Zoning Commission Thursday will consider a request for a digital sign. The First Baptist Church is requesting the zoning of property at 1211 North Vermilion Street be changed from R2 Single Family Residential to R4 Multifamily Residential to install an animated digital freestanding sign. First Baptist Church also requests the required special use permit to allow for the sign installation in the R4 zoning district. The church is located north of the Danville Family YMCA. Danville Planning and Urban Services Manager Chris Milliken said the church has been completing renovations and its desire to have outside digital signage is not allowed with the church's current zoning. The sign allowed could be up to 32 square feet. It's similar to what Emmanuel Lutheran on Bowman did a few years back, Milliken said. That was in 2014, and the signage wasn't near as many residences, he added. Having more homes across the street in this North Vermilion Street area could cause more problems, Milliken said. There are restrictions for brightness and some protections, he said of the signage. Milliken said the department hasn't gotten any complaints from concerned neighbors, but just one phone call with questions. The commission would weigh any concerns or comments from the neighborhood. Milliken said with approval, more digital signs also could be requested in that area, such as from other churches and the YMCA. The commission meets at 5:15 p.m. Thursday at the Robert E. Jones Municipal Building at 17 West Main Street. Next, we have a story entitled Fisher Fix-Up. Major restoration work moves inside at theater. And this is by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. When work was going on outside the Fisher Theater, the public could see the scaffolding and construction taking place on the tuck pointing and building addition. Now, only those walking nearby or passing by with their windows open might be able to hear the pounding of nails and saws cutting wood and the other restoration work taking place inside the historic downtown building. As one who is regularly seeing the transformation of the new windows, walls taken down, areas being opened upstairs, seeing more daylight inside, discoveries from removing plaster and walls from previous remodels and other changes, Vermilion Heritage Foundation President Sheriff Hollick said it's quite a sight to see after all these years of planning and ideas finally happening. It was always a sight to behold in looking at the historic details inside the Fisher Theater. Now, however, as full-blown restoration work is underway, more original features of the building are being discovered, such as original walls, stairways, arch windows and doorways, and the outline of four fireplaces that once heated the Grand Opera House. Pollock said they've also found in the walls a piece of an old popcorn box that is being saved for the Fisher's Arts and Entertainment Museum that will be on the third and fourth floors, in addition to an old 15-cent milk duds box and an old pop bottle. We're just enjoying all of it, Pollock said about the restoration process. Every day there is something exciting happening. The Vermilion Heritage Foundation owns and operates the historic Fisher Theater, which has been undergoing extensive renovations due to the generosity of Danville philanthropist Julius W. Hegler II. The Hegler Foundation funded the repair and restoration of the outside of the building. The Fisher Theater was built in 1884 as the Grand Opera House. The theater was remodeled and renamed the Fisher Theater after a 1912 renovation by Louis Fisher. Since the 1912 renovation, the theater has seen many changes and was last occupied by Carasotis Theaters and closed by Carasotis in 1982. Since that time, the Vermilion Heritage Foundation board and many volunteers have worked to restore the theater and to keep the theater open for tours and small events. In 2017, the Fisher Stage welcomed the Danville Area Community College Players' production of Rocky Horror Picture Show for 7 sold-out performances. Scaffolding went up on the Fisher's north side in August, and tuck pointing work began. Led by Offutt Development as the general contractor, the restoration work has included tuck pointing of the brick exterior and returning the north wall to its original condition by removing upper doors that were not original to the building and filling those spaces with matching brick. New windows have replaced the old drafty windows on the upper story, and the roof has been replaced. The south wall was repaired and new plaster stucco was applied and painted to complement the original brick building. All exterior doors were replaced, including a roll-up door on the stage, which will make moving set pieces in and out of the stage easier. Completing the outside work is a two-story addition on the south side that will include new restrooms, an additional staircase, and two-story elevator. Pollock said the results of all of this work can be felt inside the lobby and auditorium, which is now draft-free and much warmer. Work has now begun on the inside of the theater, and it's now possible to walk from the new addition onto the second floor as original doors that were between the Palace Theater and the Fisher Theater have been reopened. "It's been a lot of demo," Pollock said, about the interior work occurring. Pollock said needed demolition has occurred in the auditorium by removing falling plaster and walls from previous remodeling. Extensive work has been done to restore the integrity and save the ornate features of the logs or theater boxes, which grace both the north and south walls of the auditorium. Anyone who has been inside the Fisher Theater has seen the beautiful, decorative, hand-carved trim work that graces the stage, balcony, and other areas of the theater. According to Pollock, every effort is being made to save and preserve this trim and to authentically reproduce any missing pieces. Original trim designs have been discovered, and the decision was made to use the original designs around some features rather than later restoration designs. Two original brass sconce lights, whose outlines can still be seen on the walls of the theater, have been cleaned and restored by board member Christopher Dunn in the hopes that more of these lights can be located and returned to their original home. Recently, volunteer crews have been working to remove original trim, doors, and transoms from the second floor in order to save, restore, and reuse these features in the renovation. Chandeliers in the Fisher's lobby, waiting to be restored and hung upstairs, come from the Greer Lincoln Hotel. Board member Philip Langley has researched the history of the building and has been working closely with Offutt Development as the demolition and renovations have progressed. The Vermilion Heritage Foundation board is overwhelmed and grateful for the generosity of Julius Hagler and the talented work of Offutt Development, Langley said through a foundation press release. Both Langley and Pollock praise Offutt Development for its respect of the historic building. David Allison with Offutt Development said, "It's pretty cool working on the building." He said he remembers his dad taking him to movies at the Fisher and Palace Theaters. He also remembers throwing popcorn from the Fisher's second floor balcony. Allison said a building like the Fisher wouldn't be made today. He said it's great the restoration is being funded. The Vermilion Heritage Foundation always welcomes volunteers to help with projects, fundraising, and events, or stage or work in the theater's gift shop. Stage Presents. To follow the progress of the renovations and other Fisher Theater updates, visit its Facebook page or website at www.fishertheater.org. Donations are appreciated and accepted by using a PayPal option on the website or by sending donations to Vermilion Heritage Foundation, P.O. Box 926, Danville, Illinois, 61834. To volunteer, send a message through the Fisher Theater Facebook page or website or call Chair Pollock at 474-6638. And we're about halfway through our allotted time, so we're going to move over to the obituaries for Tuesday, February 5th. And we'll begin with Ronald Wells. Command Sergeant Major Ronald E. Wells, United States Army retired, 85, of Danville, passed away at 1 p.m. February 2nd, 2019, at his home. A celebration of life will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, February 7th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville, with Dustin Wells officiating. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Thursday, February 7th, at the funeral home. Command Sergeant Major Ronald E. Wells, retired, will be laid to rest beside his wife at Danville National Cemetery with military rites accorded by American Legion Post 210 Honor Guard. Memorials in Ronald's memory may be given to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Glenn Michelson. Glenn Michelson, 79, passed away Thursday, January 31st, 2018. A service will be at 2 p.m. Wednesday, February 6th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. Wednesday at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made in Glenn's name to the Humane Society of the United States. Brett Crowder. Brett D. Crowder, 48, of Coatesville, Indiana, formerly of Cayuga, Indiana, passed away February 2, 2019, in Coatesville. A service to celebrate the life of Brett Crowder will be at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Thursday, February 7th, at Sunset's Covington Chapel in Covington, Indiana. Pastor Ashton Stewart will officiate. Burial will follow at Mount Hope Cemetery in Covington. A visitation will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday, February 6th, also at Sunset in Covington. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to the Megan A. Crowder College Fund at any branch of Old National Bank. Susan Snyder. Susan A. Snyder, 74, of Danville, passed away Saturday, February 2, 2019, in Danville. A celebration of life service will be at 10 a.m. Wednesday, February 6th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Officiating will be Pastor Joe Humericus of First Baptist Church of Covington, Indiana. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, February 5th, at the funeral home. Alan Lynn Lathrop. Alan Lynn Lathrop, 68, of Petersburg, Indiana, passed away at 4:46 p.m. Saturday, February 2, 2019, at his residence, surrounded by his loving family. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Thursday, February 7th, at Grady Funeral Home in Williamsport. Services will be at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Friday, February 8th, in the chapel with Pastor Matt Harmless officiating. Interment will follow at Gundy Cemetery in Bismarck, Illinois. Memorial contributions may be made to the American Cancer Society. Betty M. Henry. Betty M. Henry, 84, of Danville, passed away at 12:25 p.m. February 3, 2019, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana, Illinois. A celebration of life will be at 2 p.m. Thursday, February 7th, at Southside Church of Christ, 611 South Forest Street, Danville, with Kevin Ziegler officiating. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. Thursday at the church. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville is assisting the family with arrangements. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park. Memorials in Betty's memory may be given to the Muscular Dystrophy Association or the Southside Church of Christ. James Russell. James R. Russell of Mattoon, formerly of Paris, Illinois, and Danville, Illinois, passed away January 19, 2019 at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A memorial visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. Wednesday, February 6th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Burial will be at Spring Hill Cemetery with military rites accorded by American Legion Post 210 Honor Guard. Memorials in James Russell's name to the family in lieu of flowers may be sent to Sunset Funeral Home. Bruce Andrew Gee. Bruce Andrew Gee, 93, of Covington, Indiana, died peacefully in the Lord at 6:45 a.m. Thursday, January 10, 2019, at Hope Care Center in Fort Myers, Florida. A mass of Christian burial will be at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Saturday, February 9th, at St. Joseph Catholic Church, with burial at Lower Mound Cemetery. Friends may call from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Friday, February 8th, at Grady Funeral Home in Williamsport, Indiana. Memorial contributions may be made to St. Joseph Catholic Church. Susan Sichoke, Danville. Susan Sichoke, 57, of Danville, died at 12:30 a.m. Friday, February 1, 2019, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rortvedt Funeral Services, 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton. Lonnie Dykemiller. Lonnie Dykemiller, 86, of Danville, died at 9:35 a.m. Saturday, February 2, 2019, at Hupston Community Memorial Hospital. Funeral services for the Army veteran will be at 2 p.m. Tuesday at Spring Hill Cemetery, 301 East Voorhees Street, Danville. Rortvedt Funeral Services at 3 South Hodge Street, Tilton, is in charge of arrangements. Harold Lloyd Smock. Harold Lloyd Smock, 95, of Rossville, passed away at 6:48 p.m. Saturday, February 2, 2019, at Faith Place at Prairie View Lutheran Home, Danforth. A visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, February 7, 2019, at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street in Hupston. The funeral service will be at 11 a.m. Friday, February 8, 2019, at the funeral home, with Pastor Gary Milton officiating. Burial will follow in Man's Chapel Cemetery in rural Rossville. James Thomas. James Dean Thomas, 60, of Catlin, died at 4:07 p.m. Saturday, February 2, 2019, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Private family services were held. Robison Chapel, 103 Douglas Street, Catlin, is in charge of arrangements. Diane Taylor. Diane L. Taylor, 58, of Danville, died at 3:18 a.m. Sunday, February 3, 2019, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville. And in other news from the News Gazette, we have the following story entitled Three Violent Crimes Under Investigation by Tracy Crane. Danville. Police were busy Monday investigating three violent crimes over the weekend, an armed robbery on Saturday, a shooting on Sunday, and a home invasion early Monday morning that left a 93-year-old man battered. Police said the man was sleeping in his home around 2:30 a.m. Monday in the 600 block of Beard Street when he woke up and noticed a light on. When he got out of bed to check it, he was attacked by three men who beat him and fled. The man called 911 and was taken to the hospital with cuts and bruises. Police do not have a description of the suspects. About 24 hours earlier, officers were called at 2:09 a.m. Sunday to the 100 block of Walnut Street for a report of shots fired. When they arrived, they found evidence that a gun had been fired, and while investigating, they were notified that a 29-year-old man was at the emergency room at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center with gunshot wound to his shoulder. The victim told police he was sitting in a vehicle on Walnut when someone fired several shots into it. No other injuries were reported, and police have no suspect descriptions. A little more than 24 hours before that, officers were responding at 12:47 a.m. Saturday to the 1100 block of Chandler Street in Danville for a report of an armed robbery. Police spoke with an 18-year-old victim who said he was walking along Chandler when two people, both of whom were wearing masks and one of whom had a handgun, approached him, demanded his belongings, and took his jacket, wallet, and cell phone before fleeing in a white Pontiac Grand Prix. There were no injuries reported. The investigation into all three crimes continues, and police are asking anyone with information on any of the incidents to call them at 217-431-2250, or if wishing to remain anonymous, Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-8477. Next, we have hour-long standoff ends peacefully. Danville. A standoff between Danville police and a man apparently involved in a domestic dispute Monday afternoon has ended peacefully. Public Safety Director Larry Thomason said police were called to a house in the 1300 block of North Gilbert Street near the corner of North Gilbert and Columbia Streets, where they found a man who apparently had a weapon and refused to come out of the house. He said a shot was fired, but no one was hit. Nor do they believe the shot was fired in the direction of anyone, as far as we know, he said. Thomason said the man did not have a hostage. He also said police negotiators were able to talk him into coming out of the house, and he was taken somewhere for an evaluation. The incident, which started around 3:30 p.m. and lasted about an hour, prompted police to block off a portion of Gilbert Street in front of the house. It also prompted Danville school officials to put Northridge Middle School on soft lockdown. Superintendent Alicia Geddes said the soft lockdown occurred after police called to report an incident in the community between 3:30 and 3:40 p.m. when the middle school was starting to dismiss for the day. She said transportation was suspended until police called back to say the issue had been resolved. Jody Markin, who lives in the 1300 block of North Gilbert Street, said she was returning home from the Social Security office and saw the road was blocked. I told a sheriff's deputy I was trying to get home, but he said I couldn't go home for my safety, said Markin, who watched the incident from Columbia Street along with small groups of people. And finally, from the community brief section of the commercial news, we have Library lists programs. Preschool Powell's Playgroup will meet at 10 a.m. Wednesday in the Danville Public Library's first floor meeting room. The group is for children ages 2 to 6 years and their caregivers. At 5 p.m. Wednesday in the first floor meeting room, teenagers ages 12 to 18 meet for a sweet escape, complete a fun writing activity, and Valentine cake pops. Tween gaming is a chance for children ages 8 to 11 to game together on 6 to 7 p.m. Thursday at the Children's Program Room. At 4:30 p.m. Wednesday, a teen 3D printer class will be in the Children's Program Room. Registration is required. The class is limited to 5 participants, for teens ages 12 to 18. Also, the Mike Ellis Band will play from 6 to 8 p.m. today at the American Legion Post 210. There will be a $5 cover charge. All are welcome. And this concludes our reading of the news for Vermilion County for Tuesday, February 5th, 2019. My name is Greg, and it's been a pleasure to read for you today. Hope you have a great day. Take care. Great day.